may here easily come to grief. The world here is strange to me and remote. Wild beasts also did I hear howling, and he who could have given me protection, he is himself no more. I was seeking the pious man, a saint and an anchorite, who, alone in his forest, had not yet heard of what all the world knoweth at present. What doth all the world know at present? Asked Zarathustra. Perhaps that the old God no longer liveth, in whom all the world once believed? Thou sayest it, answered the old man sorrowfully, and I served that old God until his last hour. Now, however, am I out of service, without master, and yet not free. Likewise am I no longer merry even for an hour, except it be in recollections. Therefore did I ascend into these mountains, that I might finally have a festival for myself once more, as becometh an old pope and church father, for know it, that I am the last pope, a festival of pious recollections and divine services. Now, however, is he himself dead, the most pious of men, the saint in the forest, who praised his God constantly with singing and mumbling. He himself found I no longer when I found his cot, but two wolves found I therein, which howled on account of his death, for all animals loved him. Then did I haste away. Had I thus come in vain into these forests and mountains, then did my heart determine that I should seek another, the most pious of all those who believe not in God. My heart determined that I should seek Zarathustra. Thus spake the hoary man, and gazed with keen eyes at him who stood before him. Zarathustra, however, seized the hand of the old pope, and regarded it a long while with admiration. Lo, thou venerable one, said he then, what a fine and long hand! That is the hand of one who hath ever dispensed blessings. Now, however, doth it hold fast him whom thou seekest, me, Zarathustra. It is I, the ungodly Zarathustra, who saith, who is ungodlier than I, that I may enjoy his teaching? Thus spake Zarathustra, and penetrated with his glances the thoughts and arrear thoughts of the old pope. At last the latter began, he who most loved and possessed him hath now also lost him most. Lo, I myself am surely the most godless of us at present, but who could rejoice at that? Thou servedst him to the last? Asked Zarathustra thoughtfully, after a deep silence. Thou knowest how he died? Is it true what they say, that sympathy choked him? That he saw how man hung on the cross and could not endure it, that his love to man became his hell and at last his death? The old pope, however, did not answer, but looked aside timidly with a painful and gloomy expression. Let him go, said Zarathustra, after prolonged meditation, still looking the old man straight in the eye. Let him go. He is gone. And though it honoureth thee that thou speakest only in praise of this dead one, yet thou knowest, as well as I, who he was, and that he went curious ways. To speak before three eyes, said the old pope cheerfully, he was blind of one eye. In divine matters I am more enlightened than Zarathustra himself, and may well be so. My love served him long years, my will followed all his will. A good servant, however, knoweth everything, and many a thing even which a master hideth from himself. He was a hidden god, full of secrecy. Verily he did not come by his son otherwise than by secret ways. At the door of his faith standeth adultery. Whoever extolleth him as a god of love doth not think highly enough of love itself. Did not that god want also to be judge? But the loving one loveth irrespective of reward and requital. When he was young, that god out of the Orient, then was he harsh and revengeful, and built himself a hell for the delight of his favourites. At last, however, he became old and soft and mellow and pitiful, more like a grandfather than a father, but most like a tottering old grandmother. There did he sit shrivelled in his chimney corner, fretting on account of his weak legs, world-weary, will-weary, and one day he suffocated of his all too great pity. Thou old Pope, said here Zarathustra, interposing, hast thou seen that with thine eyes? It could well have happened in that way and also otherwise. When gods die, they always die many kinds of death. Well, at all events, one way or other, he is gone. He was counter to the taste of mine ears and eyes. Worse than that, I should not like to say against him. I love everything that looketh bright and speaketh honestly. But he, thou knowest it, forsooth, thou old priest, there was something of thy type in him, the priest type. He was equivocal. He was also indistinct. How he raged at us, this wrath snorter, because we understood him badly. But why did he not speak more clearly? And if the fault lay in our ears, why did he give us ears that heard him badly? If there was dirt in our ears, well, who put it in them? Too much miscarried with him, this potter who had not learned thoroughly. That he took revenge on his pots and creations, however, because they turned out badly, that was a sin against good taste. There is also good taste in piety. This, at last, said, away with such a god. Better to have no god, better to set up destiny on one's own account, better to be a fool, better to be god oneself. What do I hear? Said then the old Pope with intent ears. O Zarathustra, thou art more pious than thou believest, with such an unbelief. Some god in thee hath converted thee to thine ungodliness. Is it not thy piety itself which no longer letteth thee believe in a god? And thine overgreat honesty will yet lead thee even beyond good and evil. Behold, what hath been reserved for thee. Thou hast eyes and hands and mouth, which have been predestined for blessing from eternity. One doth not bless with the hand alone. Nigh unto thee, though thou professest to be the ungodliest one, I feel a hail and holy odour of long benedictions. I feel glad and grieved thereby. Let me be thy guest, O Zarathustra, for a single night. Nowhere on earth shall I now feel better than with thee. Amen. So shall it be, said Zarathustra, with great astonishment. Up thither leadeth the way, there lieth the cave of Zarathustra. Gladly, forsooth, would I conduct thee thither myself, thou venerable one, for I love all pious men. But now a cry of distress calleth me hastily away from thee. In my domain shall no one come to grief. My cave is a good haven, and best of all would I like to put every sorrowful one again on firm land and firm legs. Who, however, could take thy melancholy off thy shoulders? For that I am too weak. Long, verily, should we have to wait until someone reawoke thy god for thee. For that old god liveth no more. He is indeed dead. Thus spake Zarathustra. 67. The Ugliest Man. And again did Zarathustra's feet run through mountains and forests, and his eyes sought and sought, but nowhere was he to be seen whom they wanted to see, the sorely distressed sufferer and crier. On the whole way, however, he rejoiced in his heart and was full of gratitude. What good things, said he, hath this day given me, as amends for its bad beginning? What strange interlocutors have I found? At their words will I now chew a long while, as at good corn. Small shall my teeth grind and crush them, until they flow like milk into my soul. When, however, the path again curved round a rock, all at once the landscape changed, and Zarathustra entered into a realm of death. Here bristled aloft black and red cliffs, without any grass, tree, or bird's voice, for it was a valley which all animals avoided, even the beasts of prey, except that a species of ugly, thick green serpent came here to die when they became old. Therefore the shepherds called this valley Serpent Death. Zarathustra, however, became absorbed in dark recollections, for it seemed to him as if he had once before stood in this valley. And much heaviness settled on his mind, so that he walked slowly and always more slowly, and at last stood still. Then, however, when he opened his eyes, he saw something sitting by the wayside, shaped like a man, and hardly like a man, something nondescript. And all at once there came over Zarathustra a great shame, because he had gazed on such a thing. Blushing up to the very roots of his white hair, he turned aside his glance, and raised his foot that he might leave this ill-starred place. Then, however, became the dead wilderness vocal, for from the ground a noise welled up, gurgling and rattling, as water gurgleth and rattleth at night through stopped-up water-pipes. And at last it turned into human voice and human speech. It sounded thus: "Zarathustra, Zarathustra, read my riddle. Say, say, what is the revenge on the witness? I entice thee back. Here is smooth ice. See to it that thy pride doth not here break its legs. Thou thinkest thyself wise, thou proud Zarathustra. Read then the riddle, thou hard nutcracker, the riddle that I am. Say then, who am I?" When, however, Zarathustra had heard these words, what think ye then took place in his soul? Pity overcame him, and he sank down all at once like an oak that hath long withstood many tree-fellers, heavily, suddenly, to the terror even of those who meant to fell it. But immediately he got up again from the ground, and his countenance became stern. "I know thee well," said he with a brazen voice. "Thou art the murderer of God. Let me go." "Thou couldst not endure him who beheld thee. Whoever beheld thee, through and through, thou ugliest man, thou tookest revenge on this witness." Thus spake Zarathustra, and was about to go. But the nondescript grasped at a corner of his garment, and began anew to gurgle and seek for words. "Stay," said he at last. "Stay, do not pass by. I have divined what axe it was that struck thee to the ground. Hail to thee, O Zarathustra, that thou art again upon thy feet. Thou hast divined, I know it well, how the man feeleth who killed him, the murderer of God. Stay, sit down here beside me. It is not to no purpose. To whom would I go but unto thee? Stay, sit down. Do not, however, look at me. Honour thus mine ugliness. They persecute me. Now art thou my last refuge. Not with their hatred, not with their bailiffs. Oh, such persecution would I mock at, and be proud and cheerful. Hath not all success hitherto been with the well-persecuted ones? And he who persecuteth well learneth readily to be obsequent, when once he is put behind. But it is their pity. Their pity is it from which I flee away and flee to thee. O Zarathustra, protect me, thou my last refuge, thou sole one who divinedst me. Thou hast divined how the man feeleth who killed him. Stay, and if thou wilt go, thou impatient one, go not the way that I came. That way is bad. Art thou angry with me because I have already racked language too long, because I have already counseled thee? But know that it is I, the ugliest man, who have also the largest, heaviest feet. Where I have gone, the way is bad. I tread all paths to death and destruction. But that thou passedst me by in silence, that thou blushedst, I saw it well. Thereby did I know thee as Zarathustra. Everyone else would have thrown to me his arms, his pity in look and speech, but for that I am not beggar enough. That didst thou divine. For that I am too rich, rich in what is great, frightful, ugliest, most unutterable. Thy shame, O Zarathustra, honored me. With difficulty did I get out of the crowd of the pitiful, that I might find the only one who at present teacheth that pity is obtrusive, thyself, O Zarathustra. Whether it be the pity of a god, or whether it be human pity, it is offensive to modesty, and unwillingness to help may be nobler than the virtue that rusheth to do so. That, however, namely pity, is called virtue itself at present by all petty people. They have no reverence for great misfortune, great ugliness, great failure. Beyond all these do I look, as a dog looketh over the backs of thronging flocks of sheep. They are petty, good-wooled, good-willed, grey people. As the heron looketh contemptuously at shallow pools, with backward bent head, so do I look at the throng of grey little waves and wills and souls. Too long have we acknowledged them to be right, those petty people. So we have at last given them power as well, and now do they teach that good is only what petty people call good. And truth is at present what the preacher spake, who himself sprang from them, that singular saint and advocate of the petty people, who testified of himself, I am the truth. That immodest one hath long made the petty people greatly puffed up, he who taught no small error when he taught, I am the truth. Hath any modest one ever been answered more courteously? Thou, however, O Zarathustra, passedst him by, and saidst, Nay, nay, three times nay. Thou warnedst against his error, thou warnedst the first to do so, against pity. Not everyone, not none, but thyself and thy type. Thou art ashamed of the shame of the great sufferer, and verily when thou sayest, From pity there cometh a heavy cloud, take heed, ye men. When thou teachest, All creators are hard, all great love is beyond their pity. O Zarathustra, how well versed dost thou seem to me in weather signs. Thou thyself, however, warn thyself also against thy pity, for many are on their way to thee, many suffering, doubting, despairing, drowning, freezing ones. I warn thee also against myself. Thou hast read my best, my worst riddle. Myself, and what I have done, I know the axe that felleth thee. But he had to die. He looked with eyes which beheld everything. He beheld men's depths and dregs, all his hidden ignominy and ugliness. His pity knew no modesty. He crept into my dirtiest corners. This most prying, over-intrusive, over-pitiful one had to die. He ever beheld me. On such a witness I would have revenge, or not live myself. The God who beheld everything, and also man, that God had to die. Man cannot endure it that such a witness should live. Thus spake the ugliest man. Zarathustra, however, got up, and prepared to go on, for he felt frozen to the very bowels. Thou nondescript, he said, thou warnest me against thy path. As thanks for it, I praise mine to thee. Behold, up thither is the cave of Zarathustra. My cave is large and deep and hath many corners. There findeth he that is most hidden his hiding place, and close beside it there are 100 lurking places and by-places for creeping, fluttering, and hopping creatures. Thou outcast, who hast cast thyself out, thou wilt not live amongst men and men's pity? Well then, do like me. Thus wilt thou learn also from me. Only the doer learneth. And talk first and foremost to mine animals, the proudest animal and the wisest animal. They might well be the right counsellors for us both. Thus spake Zarathustra and went his way, more thoughtfully and slowly even than before, for he asked himself many things, and hardly knew what to answer. How poor indeed is man! Thought he in his heart, how ugly, how wheezy, how full of hidden shame. They tell me that man loveth himself. Ah, how great must that self-love be, how much contempt is opposed to it. Even this man hath loved himself, as he hath despised himself. A great lover methinketh he is, and a great despiser. No one have I yet found who more thoroughly despised himself. Even that is elevation. Alas, was this, perhaps, the higher man whose cry I heard? I love the great despisers. Man is something that hath to be surpassed. 68. The Voluntary Beggar. When Zarathustra had left the ugliest man, he was chilled and felt lonesome. For much coldness and lonesomeness came over his spirit, so that even his limbs became colder thereby. When, however, he wandered on and on, uphill and down, at times past green meadows, though also sometimes over wild stony couches, where formerly, perhaps, an impatient brook had made its bed, Then he turned all at once warmer and heartier again. "What hath happened unto me?" he asked himself. "Something warm and living quickeneth me. It must be in the neighbourhood. Already am I less alone. Unconscious companions and brethren rove around me. Their warm breath toucheth my soul." When, however, he spied about and sought for the comforters of his lonesomeness, behold, there were kine there, standing together on an eminence, whose proximity and smell had warmed his heart. The kine, however, seemed to listen eagerly to a speaker, and took no heed of him who approached. When, however, Zarathustra was quite nigh unto them, then did he hear plainly that a human voice spake in the midst of the kine, and apparently all of them had turned their heads towards the speaker. Then ran Zarathustra up speedily and drove the animals aside, for he feared that someone had here met with harm, which the pity of the kine would hardly be able to relieve. But in this he was deceived, for behold, there sat a man on the ground who seemed to be persuading the animals to have no fear of him, a peaceable man and preacher on the mount, out of whose eyes kindness itself preached. "What dost thou seek here?" called out Zarathustra in astonishment. "What do I here seek?" answered he. "The same that thou seekest, thou mischief-maker, that is to say, happiness upon earth. To that end, however, I would fain learn of these kine, for I tell thee that I have already talked half a morning unto them, and just now were they about to give me their answer. Why dost thou disturb them? Except we be converted and become as kine, we shall in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven, for we ought to learn from them one thing, ruminating. And verily, although a man should gain the whole world, and yet not learn one thing, ruminating, what would it profit him? He would not be rid of his affliction. His great affliction, that, however, is at present called disgust. Who hath not, at present, his heart, his mouth, and his eyes full of disgust? Thou also, but behold these kine. Thus spake the preacher on the mount, and turned then his own look towards Zarathustra, for hitherto it had rested lovingly on the kine. Then, however, he put on a different expression. "Who is this with whom I talk?" he exclaimed, frightened, and sprang up from the ground. "This is the man without disgust. This is Zarathustra himself, the surmounter of the great disgust. This is the eye, this is the mouth, this is the heart of Zarathustra himself." And whilst he thus spake, he kissed with o'erflowing eyes the hands of him with whom he spake, and behaved altogether like one to whom a precious gift and jewel hath fallen unawares from heaven. The kine, however, gazed at it all and wondered. "Speak not of me, thou strange one, thou amiable one," said Zarathustra, and restrained his affection. "Speak to me firstly of thyself. Art thou not the voluntary beggar who once cast away great riches, who was ashamed of his riches and of the rich, and fled to the poorest, to bestow upon them his abundance and his heart? But they received him not." "But they received me not," said the voluntary beggar. "Thou knowest it forsooth. So I went at last to the animals and to those kine." "Then learnest thou," interrupted Zarathustra, "how much harder it is to give properly than to take properly, and that bestowing well is an art, the last, subtlest, master art of kindness." "Especially nowadays," answered the voluntary beggar. "At present, that is to say, when everything low hath become rebellious and exclusive and haughty in its manner, in the manner of the populace. For the hour hath come, thou knowest it, forsooth, for the great, evil, long, slow mob and slave insurrection, it extendeth and extendeth. Now doth it provoke the lower classes, all benevolence and petty giving, and the over-rich may be on their guard. Whoever at present drip, like bulgy bottles, out of all too small necks, of such bottles at present one willingly breaketh the necks. Wanton avidity, bilious envy, careworn revenge, populous pride, all these struck mine eye. It is no longer true that the poor are blessed. The kingdom of heaven, however, is with the kine." "And why is it not with the rich?" asked Zarathustra temptingly. while he kept back the kine which sniffed familiarly at the peaceful one. "Why dost thou tempt me?" answered the other. "Thou knowest it thyself better even than I. What was it drove me to the poorest, O Zarathustra? Was it not my disgust at the richest? At the culprits of riches, with cold eyes and rank thoughts, who pick up profit out of all kinds of rubbish, at this rabble that stinketh to heaven, at this gilded, falsified populace, whose fathers were pickpockets or carrion crows or rag-pickers, with wives compliant, lewd, and forgetful, for they are all of them not far different from harlots. Populous above, populous below, what are poor and rich at present? That distinction did I unlearn. Then did I flee away further and ever further until I came to those kine." Thus spake the peaceful one, and puffed himself and perspired with his words, so that the kine wondered anew. Zarathustra, however, kept looking into his face with a smile. All the time the man talked so severely, and shook silently his head. "Thou doest violence to thyself, thou preacher on the mount, when thou usest such severe words, for such severity neither thy mouth nor thine eye have been given thee. Nor, methinketh, hath thy stomach either. Unto it all such rage and hatred and foaming over is repugnant. Thy stomach wanteth softer things. Thou art not a butcher. Rather seemest thou to me a plant-eater and a root-man. Perhaps thou grindest corn. Certainly, however, thou art averse to fleshly joys, and thou lovest honey." "Thou hast divined me well," answered the voluntary beggar with lightened heart. "I love honey. I also grind corn, for I have sought out what tasteth sweetly and maketh pure breath. Also what requireth a long time, a day's work and a mouth's work for gentle idlers and sluggards. Furthest, to be sure, have those kine carried it. They have devised ruminating and lying in the sun. They also abstain from all heavy thoughts which inflate the heart." "Well," said Zarathustra, "thou shouldst also see mine animals, mine eagle and my serpent. Their like do not at present exist on earth. Behold, thither leadeth the way to my cave. Be, tonight, its guest, and talk to mine animals of the happiness of animals. Until I myself come home, for now a cry of distress calleth me hastily away from thee. Also, shouldst thou find new honey with me, ice-cold, golden-comb honey, eat it. Now, however, take leave at once of thy kind, thou strange one, thou amiable one, though it be hard for thee, for they are thy warmest friends and preceptors. One excepted whom I hold still dearer," answered the voluntary beggar. "Thou thyself art good, O Zarathustra, and better even than a cow." "Away, away with thee, thou evil flatterer," cried Zarathustra mischievously. "Why dost thou spoil me with such praise and flattery, honey?" "Away, away from me," cried he once more, and heaved his stick at the fond beggar, who, however, ran nimbly away. 69. The Shadow. Scarcely, however, was the voluntary beggar gone in haste, and Zarathustra again alone, when he heard behind him a new voice, which called out, "Stay, Zarathustra, do wait. It is myself, forsooth, O Zarathustra, myself, thy shadow." But Zarathustra did not wait, for a sudden irritation came over him on account of the crowd and the crowding in his mountains. "Whither hath my lonesomeness gone?" spake he. "It is verily becoming too much for me. These mountains swarm. My kingdom is no longer of this world. I require new mountains. My shadow calleth me? What matter about my shadow? Let it run after me. I run away from it." Thus spake Zarathustra to his heart and ran away. But the one behind followed after him, so that immediately there were three runners, one after the other. Namely, foremost, the voluntary beggar, then Zarathustra, and thirdly and hindmost his shadow. But not long had they run thus when Zarathustra became conscious of his folly, and shook off with one jerk all his irritation and detestation. "What," said he. "Have not the most ludicrous things always happened to us old anchorites and saints? Verily my folly hath grown big in the mountains. Now do I hear six old fools' legs rattling behind one another. But doth Zarathustra need to be frightened by his shadow? Also, methinketh, that after all it hath longer legs than mine." Thus spake Zarathustra, and laughing with eyes and entrails, he stood still and turned round quickly, and behold, he almost thereby threw his shadow and follower to the ground, so closely had the latter followed at his heels, and so weak was he. For when Zarathustra scrutinized him with his glance, he was frightened as by a sudden apparition. So slender, swarthy, hollow, and worn out did this follower appear. "Who art thou?" asked Zarathustra vehemently. "What doest thou here? And why callest thou thyself my shadow? Thou art not pleasing unto me." "Forgive me," answered the shadow, "that it is I. And if I please thee not, well, O Zarathustra, therein do I admire thee and thy good taste. A wanderer am I, who have walked long at thy heels, always on the way, but without a goal, also without a home, so that verily I lack little of being the eternally wandering Jew, except that I am not eternal, and not a Jew. What, must I ever be on the way, whirled by every wind, unsettled, driven about? O earth, thou hast become too round for me. On every surface have I already sat, like tired dust have I fallen asleep on mirrors and window panes. Everything taketh from me, nothing giveth. I become thin, I am almost equal to a shadow. After thee, however, O Zarathustra, did I fly, and high longest, and though I hid myself from thee, I was nevertheless thy best shadow. Wherever thou hast sat, there sat I also. With thee have I wandered about in the remotest, coldest worlds, like a phantom that voluntarily haunteth winter roofs and snows. With thee have I pushed into all the forbidden, all the worst and the furthest, and if there be anything of virtue in me, it is that I have had no fear of any prohibition. With thee have I broken up whatever my heart revered. All boundary stones and statues have I o'erthrown. The most dangerous wishes did I pursue. Verily, beyond every crime did I once go. With thee did I unlearn the belief in words and worths, and in great names. When the devil casteth his skin, doth not his name also fall away? It is also skin. The devil himself is perhaps skin. Nothing is true. All is permitted. So said I to myself. Into the coldest water did I plunge with head and heart. Ah, how oft did I stand there naked on that account, like a red crab. Ah, where have gone all my goodness and all my shame and all my belief in the good? Ah, where is the lying innocence which I once possessed, the innocence of the good and of their noble lies? Too oft, verily, did I follow close to the heels of truth. Then did it kick me in the face. Sometimes I meant to lie, and behold, then only did I hit the truth. Too much hath become clear unto me. Now it doth not concern me any more. Nothing liveth any longer that I love. How should I still love myself? To live as I incline, or not to live at all, so do I wish. So wisheth also the holiest. But alas, how have I still inclination? Have I still a goal, a haven towards which my sail is set? A good wind? Ah, he only who knoweth whither he saileth knoweth what wind is good, and a fair wind for him. What still remaineth to me? A heart weary and flippant, an unstable will, fluttering wings, a broken backbone. This seeking for my home, O Zarathustra, dost thou know that this seeking hath been my home sickening? It eateth me up. Where is my home? For it do I ask and seek, and have sought, but have not found it. O eternal everywhere, O eternal nowhere, O eternal in vain. Thus spake the shadow, and Zarathustra's countenance lengthened at his words. Thou art my shadow, said he at last, sadly. Thy danger is not small, thou free spirit and wanderer. Thou hast had a bad day. See that a still worse evening doth not overtake thee. To such unsettled ones as thou seemeth at last even a prisoner blessed. Didst thou ever see how captured criminals sleep? They sleep quietly. They enjoy their new security. Beware lest in the end a narrow faith capture thee, a hard, rigorous delusion. For now everything that is narrow and fixed seduceth and tempteth thee. Thou hast lost thy goal. Alas, how wilt thou forego and forget that loss? Thereby hast thou also lost thy way. Thou poor rover and rambler, thou tired butterfly, wilt thou have a rest and a home this evening? Then go up to my cave. Thither leadeth the way to my cave, and now will I run quickly away from thee again, already lieth as it were a shadow upon me. I will run alone, so that it may again become bright around me. Therefore must I still be a long time merrily upon my legs. In the evening, however, there will be dancing with me. Thus spake Zarathustra. 70. Noontide. And Zarathustra ran and ran, but he found no one else and was alone, and ever found himself again. He enjoyed and quaffed his solitude, and thought of good things for hours. About the hour of noontide, however, when the sun stood exactly over Zarathustra's head, he passed an old bent and gnarled tree which was encircled round by the ardent love of a vine, and hidden from itself. From this there hung yellow grapes in abundance, confronting the wanderer. Then he felt inclined to quench a little thirst, and to break off for himself a cluster of grapes. When, however, he had already his arm outstretched for that purpose, he felt still more inclined for something else, namely to lie down beside the tree at the hour of perfect noontide and sleep. This Zarathustra did, and no sooner had he laid himself on the ground in the stillness and secrecy of the variegated grass than he had forgotten his little thirst, and fell asleep. For as the proverb of Zarathustra saith, one thing is more necessary than the other, only that his eyes remained open, for they never grew weary of viewing and admiring the tree and the love of the vine. In falling asleep, however, Zarathustra spake thus to his heart, "Hush, hush, hath not the world now become perfect? What hath happened unto me? As a delicate wind danceth invisibly upon parquet seas, light, feather-light, so danceth sleep upon me. No eye doth it close to me, it leaveth my soul awake. Light is it, verily feather-light. It persuadeth me, I know not how, it toucheth me inwardly with a caressing hand, it constraineth me, yea, it constraineth me so that my soul stretcheth itself out. How long and weary it becometh my strange soul! Hath a seventh day evening come to it precisely at noontide? Hath it already wandered too long blissfully among good and ripe things? It stretcheth itself out long, longer. It lieth still, my strange soul. Too many good things hath it already tasted. This golden sadness oppresseth it. It distorteth its mouth. As a ship that putteth into the calmest cove, it now draweth up to the land, weary of long voyages and uncertain seas. Is not the land more faithful? As such a ship huggeth the shore, tuggeth the shore, then it sufficeth for a spider to spin its thread from the ship to the land. No stronger ropes are required there. As such a weary ship in the calmest cove, so do I also now repose, nigh to the earth, faithful, trusting, waiting, bound to it with the lightest threads. O happiness, O happiness, wilt thou perhaps sing, O my soul? Thou liest in the grass, but this is the secret, solemn hour, when no shepherd playeth his pipe. Take care, hot noontide sleepeth on the fields. Do not sing, hush, the world is perfect. Do not sing, thou prairie bird, my soul, do not even whisper, lo, hush, the old noontide sleepeth, it moveth its mouth. Doth it not just now drink a drop of happiness? An old brown drop of golden happiness, golden wine, something whisketh over it, its happiness laugheth, thus laugheth a god. Hush! For happiness, how little sufficeth for happiness! Thus spake I once and thought myself wise, but it was a blasphemy. That have I now learned. Wise fools speak better. The least thing precisely, the gentlest thing, the lightest thing, a lizard's rustling, a breath, a whisk, an eye glance, little maketh up the best happiness. Hush! What hath befallen me? Hark! Hath time flown away? Do I not fall? Have I not fallen? Hark! Into the well of eternity. What happeneth to me? Hush! It stingeth me, alas, to the heart. To the heart! Oh, break up my heart after such happiness, after such a sting. What? Hath not the world just now become perfect, round and ripe? Oh, for the golden round ring, whither doth it fly? Let me run after it, quick. Hush! And here Zarathustra stretched himself and felt that he was asleep. Up, said he to himself, thou sleeper, thou noontide sleeper. Well then, up, ye old legs. It is time and more than time. Many a good stretch of road is still awaiting you. Now have ye slept your fill? For how long a time? A half eternity. Well then, up now, mine old heart, for how long after such a sleep mayest thou remain awake? But then did he fall asleep anew, and his soul spake against him and defended itself, and lay down again. Leave me alone. Hush! Hath not the world just now become perfect? Oh, for the golden round ball! Get up, said Zarathustra, thou little thief, thou sluggard. What, still stretching thyself, yawning, sighing, falling into deep wells? Who art thou then, O my soul? And here he became frightened, for a sunbeam shot down from heaven upon his face. O heaven above me, said he, sighing, and sat upright. Thou gazest at me? Thou hearkenest unto my strange soul? When wilt thou drink this drop of dew that fell down upon all earthly things? When wilt thou drink this strange soul? When, thou well of eternity, thou joyous, awful, noontide abyss, when wilt thou drink my soul back into thee? Thus spake Zarathustra, and rose from his couch beside the tree, as if awakening from a strange drunkenness. And behold, there stood the sun still exactly above his head. One might, however, rightly infer therefrom that Zarathustra had not then slept long. 71. The Greeting. It was late in the afternoon only when Zarathustra, after long useless searching and strolling about, again came home to his cave. When, however, he stood over against it, not more than 20 paces therefrom, the thing happened which he now least of all expected. He heard anew the great cry of distress, and extraordinary. This time the cry came out of his own cave. It was a long, manifold, peculiar cry, and Zarathustra plainly distinguished that it was composed of many voices, although heard at a distance, it might sound like the cry out of a single mouth. Thereupon Zarathustra rushed forward to his cave, and behold, what a spectacle awaited him after that concert. For there did they all sit together whom he had passed during the day, the king on the right and the king on the left, the old magician, the pope, the voluntary beggar, the shadow, the intellectually conscientious one, the sorrowful soothsayer, and the ass. The ugliest man, however, had set a crown on his head, and had put round him 2 purple girdles, for he liked, like all ugly ones, to disguise himself and play the handsome person. In the midst, however, of that sorrowful company stood Zarathustra's eagle, ruffled and disquieted, for it had been called upon to answer too much, for which its pride had not any answer. The wise serpent, however, hung round its neck. All this did Zarathustra behold with great astonishment. Then, however, he scrutinized each individual guest with courteous curiosity, read their souls, and wondered anew. In the meantime, the assembled ones had risen from their seats, and waited with reverence for Zarathustra to speak. Zarathustra, however, spake thus. Ye despairing ones, ye strange ones, so it was your cry of distress that I heard. And now do I know also where he is to be sought, whom I have sought for in vain today, the higher man. In mine own cave sitteth he, the higher man, but why do I wonder? Have not I myself allured him to me by honey offerings and artful lure calls of my happiness? But it seemeth to me that ye are badly adapted for company. Ye make one another's hearts fretful, ye that cry for help, when ye sit here together. There is one that must first come. One who will make you laugh once more, a good jovial buffoon, a dancer, a wind, a wild romp, some old fool. What think ye? Forgive me, however, ye despairing ones, for speaking such trivial words before you, unworthy verily of such guests. But ye do not divine what maketh my heart wanton. Ye yourselves do it, and your aspect, forgive it me, for every one becometh courageous who beholdeth a despairing one. To encourage a despairing one, every one thinketh himself strong enough to do so. To myself have ye given this power, a good gift, mine honourable guests, an excellent guest's present. Well, do not then upbraid when I also offer you something of mine. This is mine empire and my dominion. That which is mine, however, shall this evening and tonight be yours. Mine animals shall serve you. Let my cave be your resting place. At house and home with me shall no one despair. In my purlieus do I protect everyone from his wild beasts, and that is the first thing which I offer you, security. The second thing, however, is my little finger, and when ye have that, then take the whole hand also, yea, and the heart with it. Welcome here, welcome to you, my guests. Thus spake Zarathustra, and laughed with love and mischief. After this greeting his guests bowed once more and were reverentially silent. The king on the right, however, answered him in their name. O Zarathustra, by the way in which thou hast given us thy hand and thy greeting, we recognize thee as Zarathustra. Thou hast humbled thyself before us. Almost hast thou hurt our reverence. Who, however, could have humbled himself as thou hast done with such pride? That uplifteth us ourselves. A refreshment is it to our eyes and hearts. To behold this, merely, gladly would we ascend higher mountains than this. For as eager beholders have we come, we wanted to see what brighteneth dim eyes. And lo, now is it all over with our cries of distress. Now are our minds and hearts open and enraptured. Little is lacking for our spirit to become wanton. There is nothing, O Zarathustra, that groweth more pleasingly on earth than a lofty, strong will. It is the finest growth. An entire landscape refresheth itself at one such tree. To the pine do I compare him, O Zarathustra, which groweth up like thee, tall, silent, hardy, solitary, of the best, supplest wood, stately. In the end, however, grasping out for its dominion with strong green branches, asking weighty questions of the wind, the storm, and whatever is at home on high places, answering more weightily a commander, a victor. Oh, who should not ascend high mountains to behold such growths? At thy tree, O Zarathustra, the gloomy and ill-constituted also refresh themselves. At thy look, even the wavering become steady and heal their hearts. And verily, towards thy mountain and thy tree do many eyes turn today. A great longing hath arisen, and many have learned to ask, who is Zarathustra? And those into whose ears thou hast at any time dripped thy song and thy honey, all the hidden ones, the lone dwellers and the twain dwellers, have simultaneously said to their hearts, doth Zarathustra still live? It is no longer worth while to live. Everything is indifferent. Everything is useless. Or else we must live with Zarathustra. Why doth he not come, who hath so long announced himself? Thus do many people ask. Hath solitude swallowed him up, or should we perhaps go to him? Now doth it come to pass that solitude itself becometh fragile and breaketh open, like a grave that breaketh open and can no longer hold its dead. Everywhere one seeth resurrected ones. Now do the waves rise and rise around thy mountain, O Zarathustra, and however high be thy height, many of them must rise up to thee. Thy boat shall not rest much longer on dry ground. And that we, despairing ones, have now come into thy cave, and already no longer despair, it is but a prognostic and a presage that better ones are on the way to thee. For they themselves are on the way to thee, the last remnant of God among men, that is to say, all the men of great longing, of great loathing, of great satiety. All who do not want to live, unless they learn again to hope, unless they learn from thee, O Zarathustra, the great hope. Thus spake the king on the right, and seized the hand of Zarathustra in order to kiss it. But Zarathustra checked his veneration and stepped back, frightened, fleeing, as it were, silently and suddenly into the far distance. After a little while, however, he was again at home with his guests, looked at them with clear, scrutinizing eyes, and said, "My guests, ye higher men, I will speak plain language and plainly with you. It is not for you that I have waited here in these mountains." "Plain language and plainly? Good God," said here the king on the left to himself, "one seeth he doth not know the good Occidentals, this sage out of the Orient. But he meaneth blunt language and bluntly. Well, that is not the worst taste in these days." "Ye may, verily, all of you be higher men," continued Zarathustra, "but for me, ye are neither high enough nor strong enough. For me, that is to say, for the inexorable which is now silent in me, but will not always be silent, and if ye appertain to me, still it is not as my right arm. For he who himself standeth, like you, on sickly and tender legs, wisheth above all to be treated indulgently, whether he be conscious of it or hide it from himself. My arms and my legs, however, I do not treat indulgently. I do not treat my warriors indulgently. How then could ye be fit for my warfare? With you I should spoil all my victories, and many of you would tumble over if ye but heard the loud beating of my drums. Moreover, ye are not sufficiently beautiful and well born for me. I require pure, smooth mirrors for my doctrines. On your surface even mine own likeness is distorted. On your shoulders presseth many a burden, many a recollection, many a mischievous dwarf squatteth in your corners. There is concealed populace also in you. And though ye be high and of a higher type, much in you is crooked and misshapen. There is no smith in the world that could hammer you right and straight for me. Ye are only bridges. May higher ones pass over upon you. Ye signify steps, so do not upbraid him who ascendeth beyond you into his height. Out of your seed there may one day arise for me a genuine son and perfect heir, but that time is distant. Ye yourselves are not those unto whom my heritage and name belong. Not for you do I wait here in these mountains. Not with you may I descend for the last time. Ye have come unto me only as a presage that higher ones are on the way to me. Not the men of great longing, of great loathing, of great satiety, and that which ye call the remnant of God. Nay, nay, three times nay, for others do I wait here in these mountains, and will not lift my foot from thence without them. For higher ones, stronger ones, triumphanter ones, merrier ones, for such as are built squarely in body and soul, laughing lions must come. O my guests, ye strange ones, have ye yet heard nothing of my children, and that they are on the way to me? Do speak unto me of my gardens, of my happy isles, of my new beautiful race. Why do ye not speak unto me thereof? This guest's present do I solicit of your love, that ye speak unto me of my children. For them am I rich, for them I became poor. What have I not surrendered? What would I not surrender that I might have one thing? These children, this living plantation, these life trees of my will and of my highest hope. Thus spake Zarathustra, and stopped suddenly in his discourse, for his longing came over him, and he closed his eyes and his mouth, because of the agitation of his heart. And all his guests also were silent, and stood still and confounded, except only that the old soothsayer made signs with his hands and his gestures. 72. The Supper. For at this point the soothsayer interrupted the greeting of Zarathustra and his guests. He pressed forward as one who had no time to lose, seized Zarathustra's hand and exclaimed, "But Zarathustra! One thing is more necessary than the other, so sayest thou thyself. Well, one thing is now more necessary unto me than all others. A word at the right time. Didst thou not invite me to table? And here are many who have made long journeys. Thou dost not mean to feed us merely with discourses. Besides, all of you have thought too much about freezing, drowning, suffocating, and other bodily dangers. None of you, however, have thought of my danger, namely perishing of hunger." Thus spake the soothsayer. When Zarathustra's animals, however, heard these words, they ran away in terror, for they saw that all they had brought home during the day would not be enough to fill the one soothsayer. "Likewise, perishing of thirst," continued the soothsayer, "and although I hear water splashing here like words of wisdom, that is to say plenteously and unweariedly, I want wine. Not everyone is a born water drinker like Zarathustra, neither doth water suit weary and withered ones. We deserve wine. It alone giveth immediate vigor and improvised health." On this occasion, when the soothsayer was longing for wine, it happened that the king on the left, the silent one, also found expression for once. "We took care," said he, "about wine. I, along with my brother the king on the right, we have enough of wine, a whole ass load of it, so there is nothing lacking but bread." "Bread," replied Zarathustra, laughing when he spake, "it is precisely bread that anchorites have not. But man doth not live by bread alone, but also by the flesh of good lambs, of which I have two. These shall we slaughter quickly and cook spicily with sage. It is so that I like them, and there is also no lack of roots and fruits, good enough even for the fastidious and dainty, nor of nuts and other riddles for cracking. Thus will we have a good repast in a little while, but whoever wish to eat with us must also give a hand to the work, even the king's, for with Zarathustra even a king may be a cook." This proposal appealed to the hearts of all of them, save that the voluntary beggar objected to the flesh and wine and spices. "Just hear this glutton Zarathustra," said he jokingly. "Doth one go into caves and high mountains to make such repasts? Now indeed do I understand what he once taught us, blessed be moderate poverty, and why he wisheth to do away with beggars." "Be of good cheer," replied Zarathustra, "as I am. Abide by thy customs, thou excellent one, grind thy corn, drink thy water, praise thy cooking, if only it make thee glad. I am a law only for mine own. I am not a law for all. He, however, who belongeth unto me must be strong of bone and light of foot. Joyous in fight and feast, no sulker, no John o' dreams, ready for the hardest task as for the feast, healthy and hale. The best belongeth unto mine and me, and if it be not given us, then do we take it, the best food, the purest sky, the strongest thoughts, the fairest women." Thus spake Zarathustra. The king on the right, however, answered and said, "Strange! Did one ever hear such sensible things out of the mouth of a wise man? And verily it is the strangest thing in a wise man, if, over and above, he be still sensible and not an ass." Thus spake the king on the right, and wondered. The ass, however, with ill will, said, "Yeah," to his remark. This, however, was the beginning of that long repast which is called the supper in the history books. At this there was nothing else spoken of but the higher man. 73. The higher man. 1.